Monster.
It's Wine. And this podcast may not be suitable for all ages.
The opinions we have in our podcast aren't necessarily the same of those of the Comic Bastards.
So blame us if things get too saucy.
Or too awesome.
Let's go!
Hello, folks. It's Monster.
It's Wine.
And we're going to be playing it totally by ear this week. I'm not fucking with you. That's just how it's going to be. I'm light on content. I'm going to make it up as we go along. It's up to you to decide if it really sounds like that or if you say these guys can make magic out of nothing.
Well, they're still listening, they know this.
That's true. It doesn't really matter at this point. We've got that core 10 people who, rain or shine, seem to just come back for more.
Soldiers.
We appreciate you.
The Monster and Wine Street Soldiers.
Right. It's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Our little drunk goblins. I don't know. I tried to mix wine with Monster.
Anyway. I was like, our drunk goblin.
I came up with drunk
goblins. Oh, I get
it.
Yeah. I was like, how dare you, sir? I have not even cracked open the beer.
The street team is in the works, okay? We're not ready yet. We're not there yet.
The street team.
So,
were you ever a member of a street team?
I was on a bunch of street
teams. I knew it. I knew you were. Because I'm like, I would never be on a street team. I'm like,
Yeah. Bunch of mailing lists with street teams for different bands that I liked back in the day.
Great. So explain it to me, because I kind of don't know what it is.
They just basically used you as a marketing tool before the internet was a thing. So they would send you these little care packages filled with advertising materials. And you would just go around and make sure people and places had those materials.
Would you go into the local like shoe shop and just be like, hey man, it's a great band.
But no, it wasn't like that. It was more of like hanging around concert venues and stuff. And you'd see people lined up for things, and because they would send you a ton of stickers. Like, I've still got a bunch left over from my street team days for like the Distillers. Does anybody remember the Distillers? They were awesome. They were like a punk rock band that was like the singer was a female, it was like a female version of Rancid.
Wait, I think I do remember them. Did they have a kind of a breakout hit?
Yeah, I think so. But the singer, she kind of sung like a female version of Tim Armstrong from Rancid. Like, you know, I guess, like kind of slurry. Maybe Drain the Blood or City of Angels. Those two were pretty big songs for them. But yeah, they were cool. They were cool. But anywho, I was also on Less Than Jake street team. Still got a bunch of their stickers also. But anyway, Unwritten Law. Oh, oy vey.
So many street teams.
But kids, this was before the internet, and the bands were using their fans to be their social media, essentially. But you got like free little perks like stickers and pins and buttons and patches and shirts and things like that. So it was kind of their way of saying, hey, thanks. But it was just fun at the time. It was, like I said, a different time. But cool. It was cool. Just part of the experience, you know? Part of the experience. Street teams. Now you don't really need them, quite frankly.
You just have like the street teams are the Twitter followers. Yeah.
Your little tech-savvy people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good times. I'll tell you what I got to talk about today.
All right.
This is... what a week. Last week, I told you folks on the show about the Friday the 13th video game.
The Kickstarter.
Yeah. Exactly. And it came out last Friday. So it's been a week. On the nose as we record this. Now, it was a $39 game, which, you know, refreshing, okay? Most new games are $60. $39, okay. Very nice. I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm the kind of guy that rarely gets into a game before doing his research.
Oh, yeah. You come by the moniker Captain Research, honestly.
Yes. Right. Right. And this is one of the few times where a game has sucked me in without really having any reviews to go off of. I got caught up in the fact that it was Friday the 13th. I got it caught up in the concept. I got caught up in the look of it. It had me, you see.
Oh no. I don't like where this is going.
I don't like where it's going either. I feel somewhat guilty. I got my brother to buy it. I was like, hey, jump on board. Let's get on the gravy train. Got my friend Brandon to buy it.
Why did you get all these people to buy it? So that you could play it online with each other?
Because it's an online-only game. And, yeah, I wanted us to be a group of counselors together.
How much is it?
$40.
Yeah, all right.
So I get this game. And the first thing that I notice upon firing it up is that it's taking an insane amount of fucking time to connect to a game session.
I have a question. Did it take so long to connect that you went in and checked your internet to see if it was down?
Well, no, but... It did make me get back on the interwebs and start researching what the fuck was going on. I thought, this is abnormal.
Was it so popular that it just the demand just crashed the servers and what have yous?
So here's what I find out.
Okay.
I start following Friday the 13th. Game on Twitter.
Angry just to follow. Stay
updated. I'm angry, but I'm angry because I don't know what the fuck is happening.
You're angry because you don't know how angry you should be.
Right. Because, you know, you buy a game, the least it could do is fucking work.
I think that's 80% of my anger. Is getting angry and not knowing how angry I should be.
Right. So I'm sitting here like, this is abnormal. So I get on the old Twitter Magoo, and sure enough, there's trouble. There is trouble brewing. Like you wouldn't believe.
Okay. What's the trouble?
Okay. So, in a nutshell, these guys said they were just hammered so hard with so many people accessing the game that their servers overloaded.
It's like, I know.
It's
thank you, it's Silicon Valley. Those,
It's like, you know that expression, you had one job?
Yeah, I used that expression today.
Complete and utter failure. Now, obviously I was frustrated because I said, this is online only. It's not like there's a single player campaign as a backup until you get your fucking servers in order.
I have a question too. Sorry. This is a Kickstarter.
Oh, no.
So it wasn't like they didn't know. Was it one of those things where they did the Kickstarter to make the game and then they put the game on sale and then they were like, oh, like the sale of it exceeded their expectations? Because I know, like, if it's a Kickstarter and they made enough money, to me, I would be like, were they gauging the Kickstarter response to, like, how much server space we need?
Hmm. Well, from what I can tell, they said, because it became such an issue that nobody, like, there was just a ton of people coming out of the woodwork saying that, I can't find the session. I can't find the session. It just keeps timing out. Or I'll get into a session, and this is one of the more frustrating things, you'll finally get a game, and then it'll boot you out.
Ooh.
And say, like, error connectivity lost, or it'll give you some bullshit error message.
Ooh.
So the wolves came out, and they were in full collateral damage control, whatever you want to call it, mode, where they were just like, uh-oh. Batting down the hatches, boys.
That's you're totally right. That's had one job situation.
I felt that way. And then I started seeing, like, their explanation. Oh, by the way, amongst all the outcry, the pitchforks, the torches, what have you, there was a constant meme, because, you know, memes.
Mm-hmm.
There was one that kept popping up that just said, Jason can't kill you if you can't play. And I was like, oh, I can't help but laugh. But good Lord, these people are such savages. They are kicking this team while they're down, like a motherfucker.
Yeah, just going. It's like a shark that smells blood in the water. Just let's go, internet.
Every update that they would put, somebody would throw that meme in there. It was just like, get him. So I'm trying to feel bad about it, and the reason why I'm not as insanely angry as I maybe would be in other circumstances is because they've been very, gosh, transparent, I guess you could say, and very proactive with keeping us informed as to what they're working on and what the problems are and their awareness of it all.
That goes a long way.
It really does, because this is a really small independent developer, so it's not like one of those huge, like, major companies that are putting it out that have, like, all these resources at their disposal.
That's what makes it so, it makes it so difficult, because on one hand, it's this small company and it's just DIYing it. And they produced a product that was so successful that so many people wanted to play it more than they expected. It exceeded their expectations. And as a result, crashed their servers because it was so successful, but now they have to endure all of this wrath and hate because what they dreamed of and what they wanted to produce was beyond what they were prepared and realistically for.
Yes. It's basically a matter of them taking a look at the numbers of, like, okay, who backed this project? How many people were out there beta testing it, etc.? How many pre-orders do we have? And then they were like, triple that number. but like people showed up on day one than they expected. So their servers overloaded and they couldn't handle it.
That's gotta be so
fried. Sorry?
It was just so bittersweet. Just like, bittersweet.
Yeah, because it's like, well, we've been working our ass off for years. They said they've been working on this for years. And obviously they want it to be played. It's like, you know, you've been working so hard on something for the world to see and experience, and it kind of shits the bed.
You don't have to. I am walking this road this weekend. You do not have to tell me how terrifying that is. I feel for these guys now.
So, it's just been, I don't know, their database just got fucked, and I think that set them back even more because they had to go in and repair a lot of corrupted data.
Well, how did the data, do you know how the data got corrupted? I'm not super nerdy, but.
Damn, this guy put a meme up that said database login failure, the game. These people are the heartless.
Man.
Yeah, it's funny, but I'm also not like joining in on the hatred because, like I said, it does go a long way that I feel like they're working really hard on it and that they really want people to have this game and play it. But it's been one of the worst rollouts for a game that I've seen personally.
I feel bad. At this point, just knowing what you've told me, I feel bad for them because they had this, everything was leading up to this day, like how hard they worked, and and then it goes like this. Like, what would be worse, this or like, I don't, like five people wanted it? You know, like first day and it's like, oh, just five people and they like hated it.
And trust me, those people turned out too. They were like, it's only one of the biggest franchises in the world, you fuckers. How could you not see this coming?
Yeah, but there's a difference between seeing something and having the money to see something.
Yeah.
Like server space isn't, but they're not Google.
Yeah, I guess they said something about they were anticipating like 30,000 players at any given time. But it ended up being like 75,000.
That's more than double what they were expecting. So, of course, they were probably at the server store and they were like, well, here you go. You can have this for this much money. What's your next option? Well, it's three times as much money. And they're like, we're modest. We'll go with option A.
And, you know, I've been trying to see what the websites were saying with the reviews.
Mm-hmm. Like for somebody who actually played the game.
Yeah, and you know, GameSpot's my go-to source, and they just today reviewed it, even though it came out a week ago. So they've been waiting because they wanted to be somewhat fair, because their initial impressions talked about how plagued the rollout was. And if I may share a few highlights.
I have a question before you share the few highlights. This GameSpot review, you said that, was it that they didn't get the game in time to review it, or they had the game but they did a self-imposed embargo on it until more people played the game?
They did a self-imposed embargo on it because they were trying to give the developers the benefit of the doubt to get their shit together.
Ah, okay.
That's, yeah, which is more than fair.
That's way more than fair.
Because they could have reviewed it as is and just been like, what the fuck is going on here?
But they're like, if this is an upstart, it's indie, it's a tough world out there. Let's just see.
Right. So they said when they published their review in progress last week, it was after a couple of days of playing relatively smooth matches on the PC. Since launch day, the PC version has remained our go-to option, but more out of necessity than by choice. On both PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, Friday the 13th has been intermittently unplayable. Yes, private matches with friends are sometimes possible, but if you wish to join up with a band of strangers online for a bout of deadly hide-and-go-seek from the comfort of your couch, you're either entirely out of luck or you're stuck waiting upwards of 10 minutes for a match after days of not being able to play at all. Developers Gun Media and Illphonic are on the case, providing frequent updates that seem to be improving the situation in minor ways, but for reasons involving platform holders' patching policies, which is basically Gun Media and Illphonic are working on creating a patch for the PlayStation and Xbox versions, which is meant to rectify a lot of the issues. Mm-hmm. But they have to go through like kind of an approval process through Microsoft and Sony respectively.
See, that's how they keep the little man down.
Right. So there's more loopholes to jump through that people on Twitter have zero patience for. So it's hard to imagine Friday the 13th being anything other than a half-baked experience for the foreseeable future. Even if servers were up to top speed and able to keep up with the purported influx of eager players, you could still look at Friday the 13th and ask yourself if it would have been better off released as an early access game. The answer is yes.
Now, what's an early access game?
An early access game is a game that they put out there for sale that is essentially a taste of what's to come, so to speak.
It's like a demo?
Kinda, but I think more substantial than a demo. Like, you have most of the core of the game there instead of just like 5 minutes of play or like one stage. But it's usually for much cheaper. You don't pay like full price for an early access game, but it does feel that way. It feels like an early access game where you're like, okay, this has potential, but you can clearly see that it's not finished yet.
And these early access games, that's something that is pretty common in the video game sphere.
PC. Yeah.
In the PC game. Okay. Sure. Like, these guys who are putting it together, they would be well acquainted with an option. At some point in a conference room, this idea probably came up and somebody said, nah, man, let's be legends.
But GameSpot says, with the dearth of maps, inconsistent frame rate on consoles, laughable animations, and shoddy collision detection are evidence of a game that isn't ready for prime time.
Damn.
The issues are disappointing, but only on the principle. I'm scrolling, people. Spot's website is very heavy. It is just like, I will. The issues are disappointing, but not only on the principle of meeting the expectations of a finished product. In Friday the 13th, that pops its blood-soaked head up every now and then. Teenager versus supernatural murderer premise is one that will speak to anyone with an affinity for survival games and co-op problem solving and 80s slasher films. It has great potential, which is why you can't help but be frustrated to see it left unrealized, if not outright squandered. About how the game and how you're randomly chosen as Jason, which is another problem that they seem to have, because the rate at which you get picked, the percentage, is so low. Like, you could play all day and maybe get chosen to play Jason once. So a bit, which I won't go into, the issues.
So you spent $40 for a game that you can't really play yet.
That's how it feels. It feels like I bought something broken.
Man.
So to surmise, they say, you know, these shortcomings and ongoing server issues aren't easily overlooked, and they work against what promise Friday the 13th shows. As of now, a week after launch, it's short on content and performs poorly all around, especially on consoles. The story goes that the developers weren't prepared for the amount of people who wanted to jump on day one, but that does little to assuage players who were convinced that they were paying for a finished product. Despite showing potential that may one day be realized, Friday the 13th comes across as an unfinished game that shouldn't have been released in its current state.
Ooh.
Like, it's a 4 out of 10.
Ooh. And they were being fair.
They were being fair. They were like, listen, we're going to wait. And you still didn't get your shit together. So I think that's a fair review for what you're left with currently. Which is a sad thing to say, because I was able to play it Wednesday night for quite a while with one of my friends, and we were having fun because it was actually finding matches.
Mm-hmm.
But we also had times where we timed out, got kicked out, and had to like reset the game in order to get it to try and connect again. It just feels like this. You know how they say, well, we just weren't prepared for the amount of players. Like, that's one thing. I get that. You were just like, whoa, okay. That's kind of flattering. I get it. But there are still so many other aspects of the game that make you think, this game's just not ready.
Oh. Ooh.
Like, why is this out right now? It feels very unfinished in many ways.
Amateur Night at Dixie.
Kind of. I don't know. Like, if it's a, you know, that's the problem with Kickstarter, though. Once you take someone's money and you tell them something, they do not respond well to the word delay or postpone.
Oh, yeah, because they parted with that money. But
yeah, that $40 entitles them to fuck your mother and kill your family.
I guess
that's how they act.
That's the way that I've always viewed Kickstarter. So I've never donated to a Kickstarter. And I'm sure that there are ones that are like super professional and like, yeah. But then at the same time, I'm just like, they're just, I don't know. I have, like, you know me. I'm very suspicious of everything. Especially anything where there's money involved. Especially now.
I think with Kickstarter, the best way to look at it, if you see something that interests you and you want to donate, look at that money as playing the lotto. Like,
yeah, you're throwing it away.
It's gone. It's gone. And don't sweat it. Just be like, I can throw this money away. Don't bank on some huge return, essentially.
Yeah, but you're not going to get a huge return. You should. It's basically I would look at it as a donation in that you hope that you this succeeds. I have this extra money to help you achieve your goal. I hope it succeeds, but you can't. Yeah, that's tough.
The donations, I mean, the people that back it, or talk about how they bought it, they are animals. Like, every time this team posts, or they're still fucking ruthless. Like, you can't appease them until it's done and dead and completed.
Well,
there's no pleasing
it's them. The internet, and they feel like they have skin in the game.
Yeah,
but you put those two together.
Granted, some of the tweets do make me laugh, but I also shake my head while I'm laughing because I'm just like, Jesus Damn. Christ. You should be ashamed.
I mean, I forget. Refresh my memory if you can. This Kickstarter, these people, were they just these Joe Schmoes, or were they people with some sort of track record? You could look and you could say, oh, okay, they did X, Y, and Z, so I trust they know what they're doing. Are they like, hey, we're just these kids and we got a dream?
I believe everybody involved has experience working in the game industry.
Okay.
Formed their own production company. And they were like, we really want to make a Friday the 13th game because there hasn't been in 89 on the NES. And it became this passion project, and they got all these the right people involved. And Tom Savini, the guy that did the effects.
Do you think that if this, how would this have been handled differently, knowing what you know about the video game industry? How would this have been handled differently if, say, this was a title that was going to, like, it wasn't independent. Does that make sense?
AAA publisher put it out?
Yeah.
Like a big major company?
Yeah, like, is this something, like, I guess obviously based on the GameStop interview or review, the a big
GameSpot. GameStop is a store that sucks.
Sorry. Review of that you like I can't think of the word. I was trying to be all fancy, but anyway. So if this was a title, say the only video game company I really know is EA Sports off the dome. So say EA Sports what?
EA huge. Yeah, Electronic Arts.
Okay, Electronic Arts. I'm assuming that if this was an Electronic Arts joint, EA would be like you, it wouldn't even have gotten to this point. They would have put the kibosh on it because they'd be like, whoa. Like, because you always talk about the games nowadays and how they release a game and there's always some problem with them and they just do an update later. Is this something where even the big dogs would be like, yo, we're not even going to release it in this condition?
Wow, that's a good question. So my personal opinion is if a major developer were putting out Friday the 13th, I don't think it would have been released in the state.
Wait, repeat that?
I don't think they would put it out in the state that it's in.
Okay.
That being said, though, it doesn't mean that I think a bigger company should have done it, because I think the appeal of a smaller company with a real passion for the project, I think they were able to put a lot of details into it that maybe a major company wouldn't have given as much of a shit about. Like, this game is very fan service heavy. If you love Friday the 13th, there's a lot of shit in the game that you'll be tickled with, and you can tell that they gave a fuck. It just feels like it just needs a lot more polish, because there are genuinely fun moments. Like when I was playing, I was like, this is fun. It's tense, which is what it should be. There's just really good ideas in it, but it's broken in a lot of ways.
Is this something given the culture of the internet and the industry of the video games, do you feel like fairly confident that the game, given the time, like if they have enough time, that they'll be able to fix it and that it will become the game that you see there? Or is it something where like, oh, this could probably just like all just get shut down because of all of the negativity?
The reason I'm not more upset about this is because I do have faith that they are going to fix it. I think that they have put so much into it that it would kill them, figuratively, maybe literally, if some of them are more of the weak-minded, but I think they put so much into it that it would just kill them to let it be known as this game that was just a fucking mess.
All right.
I think the rollout being such a disaster is even more fuel for them to say, we've got to fix this because we don't want the legacy of the biggest game that we've worked on so far to be this flawed, broken heap of shit.
I think it would be interesting to know, to just be inside and see if the rollout, like, you know how there's people who are really great at probably designing, like, designing these games, coming up with them, and I wonder if they're saying, like, we can never meet this deadline. Like, what are you talking about? Like, we want to make this perfect and stuff. And then how there's usually, like, the money people or some sort of business people who aren't really, they don't really understand the creative side of it, but they understand, like, the showbiz side of it and the splashy rollout, and saying, like, no, this is a time we need to release it. We need to make this deadline. Like, no matter what, you make this deadline. I just wonder if there's any sort of clash like that behind the scenes, or if it was just something. I just wonder about the story, the behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes. I think that's a common issue with major publisher titles. I think a lot of the reason behind a lot of the games feeling like they need to be patched on these big developers is because they are forced to strictly adhere to deadlines. And the big wigs that probably aren't gamers, they just want a game out at a certain time on the calendar, right?
Yeah.
And if it's not really done, well, we'll fix it later. And that's why I'm glad Friday the 13th is at least with this independent developer, because I don't know that a major developer would give a fuck enough about it to keep patching it or to keep working on it. I think they would let it die in the water and move on to the next title because they have a lot of other shit to work on.
But at the same time, they are an independent developer, so why did they release it?
I would love to know that too, because I can understand not being prepared for the influx of players. Mm-hmm. Just based on curiosity, people are like, fuck, I guess I'll check this Friday the 13th game out. And maybe they just didn't account for all that clearly. That I understand. I don't understand a lot of the glitchy technical bugs that are in the game, how they didn't experience that themselves and think, we can't release it like this. We got to polish this up first. Mm-hmm. I do wonder what the fuck they were thinking there, or who made that call. Because there are some things that are just unacceptable, aside from the server overload, that really make me scratch my head. I'm like, what the fuck? Did they not play this? I get that you got like 10 people on your team, but did anybody test this?
Hmm.
Like, who tested this? Nobody, I think. So I'm not giving them a complete pass, because I think that there are so many glaring issues that they, I guess, overlooked and just decided to put it out anyway, that I shake my head a little bit and go, shame on you, cocksuckers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, that's very interesting.
I think a 4 is fair, and I hate to say that because I bought the fucking thing.
But you still have it, so while they're fixing it and stuff, like, eventually it could be the game that you see. See in there.
And that's the frustrating thing, is that it's the trend of video games now. It's almost like you're buying a product for what it could be.
Ooh.
In some occasions, it's like, wow, what the fuck's wrong with this game? What's this issue? Oh, we're working on that. We'll have that done by next week or a couple weeks. What the fuck? You know?
Yeah.
It's a common thing now. And it's an unfortunate common thing, because Lord knows the price of the games aren't going down.
No, but that's why they can do it. The theme of this podcast, the answer to every question is money.
Cycle. It's just like, well, if you keep paying it, and it's almost like you're saying our practices are okay. We can keep doing it this way until you put your foot down. And nobody's going to put their foot down because they want to play the game.
Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you for letting me elaborate on what has been a heartbreaking video game week for me.
No problem.
Now, you sent me a picture.
Yes.
Didn't you?
I did.
Of a variety of things.
Oh my goodness gracious. I got a package from the parental units this week. And a common theme of this podcast is the Oreo cookie flavors.
Yes, it's a big staple on the show.
Right. And I believe not so long ago, it was ballyhooed about the, what is it, waffles and syrup flavored Oreos.
Yes, ma'am.
And I made the sarcastic comment online of like, oh, well, you know, if my parents loved me, we'll see how much they love me. You know, just thinking about the waffles and syrup Oreos.
Yeah.
So my mom texts me and she's like, you have a package that will be arriving. I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm kind of hoping. Because her friend was the one, Donis, was the one that pointed out these Oreos to me. And I shared them with you. And that was how the whole thing got going. The whole ball got rolling. And so then I get the package. I pick it up. You know, I'm kind of like, oh, I'm thinking like maybe they mail me a thing of Oreos.
Mm.
They did. And they mailed me a thing of Oreos and a thing of Oreos and a thing of Oreos. I got four whole packs of Oreos. The waffles and syrup flavor, the red velvet flavor, the firework flavor, and the cinnamon roll flavor.
God bless them for that.
I know, but then at the same time...
You're thinking, how am I going to eat all these cookies?
No, I'm thinking, I don't want to eat all these cookies. I got to be in a bathing suit in like 20 days.
If only they had sent you those four flavors in like four packs.
Just four, like, of them in a Ziploc bag.
Yeah. Like, if only.
I haven't even opened any of them yet. Because
well you know what you could do?
What could I do? Because
share with your coworker.
Oh, that's probably a good idea.
Take a pack in, pull that layer back, walk around, say, would you like an Oreo? Do you like an Oreo?
Yeah, I should take them to work. Because
you know,
I'll like take out.
You'll feel generous.
Yeah, because I was just like, because I know I could eat them. That's not.
Right.
That's not the issue with me. I, like, you would be laughing hysterically if you saw me right now. I look like a junkie. I'm just rubbing my arms. Because the box that they're in is open, and it's in front of me right now. And I'm just,
they sent you junk. You're the junkie.
Yeah, I'm the junk. They send the junkie junk.
Yep.
I got a weekend that I got to go through, and I'm just, I'm just going to OD on Oreos this weekend. And I don't want to.
Well, I think you need to take them to work, keep them in a drawer, walk around, offer them to people. That way you'll be getting rid of them. You'll be doing a nice thing. Plus, you know, you can have some yourself, but it'll show, you know, some restraint as well. It'll help get them out of your life without feeling like you wasted them.
I know. But Jason, it's Friday. I gotta get through Saturday and Sunday.
Have a couple. Look, I mean, you're entitled. Have a fireworks and have a maples and syrup.
It always starts as you just have one or two.
What?
And before you know it.
Try to abide by the serving size.
That's just a suggestion.
Well, try to follow it. Just two cookies for each day. Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, I'll follow it, and then I'll walk. It's not like, oh, I have an upstairs, and the cookies are downstairs, and I'm just like, well, I'm upstairs. I'm not going all the way downstairs for cookies. Like, there's no partition between my kitchen and my living room.
Well, I think that's all you can do is offer them to people.
I will offer what's left. This is my lost weekend.
Yeah. Like, who knows how you're going to come out the other end on this?
With diabetes?
You'd just be vomiting come Monday morning.
I just developed full-blown diabetes in a weekend.
The beats.
So I should have some reviews for you next weekend.
I'm curious as to what you think, because I have partaken on all of those. Partaken?
Ooh, speaking of flavors. Speaking of like reviews of things.
Yeah.
Last weekend I picked up a chocolate flavored Twinkie. Not the regular Twinkie dipped in the chocolate coating or whatever. I'm talking the sponge cake. Yeah, the sponge cake was chocolate and with the classic filling.
Right.
Fucking delicious.
And I had one as well. It is tasty.
Isn't it?
It's a dangerous cake.
Remember back in the day with the old Suzy Q's? Because we rode hard for the Suzy Q's.
Suzy Q, what?
That was my favorite Hostess snack cake. And the suit, because it was that moist cake with all that delicious icing. It was just nuts and bolts, right? And then they got rid of the Suzy Q for the longest time. Well documented on the Monster and Wine Hour of Power.
It was a sad time.
Dark time in our nation.
Jesus.
They came back with it. And remember, I had a conniption fit.
I couldn't find an individual pack.
Couldn't find it. And then I finally found it. And I was so happy that I found it. But it was smaller. And the cake wasn't as moist. I find that this chocolate Twinkie, that's the Suzy. It's the closest thing to the old school Suzy Q. It's closer to an old school Suzy Q than it is to the new school Suzy Q is to the Suzy Q.
Which is more conveniently packaged for you as well with the individually wrapped Twinkies.
It is.
Yeah. So you could essentially buy a box of those as your new Suzy Q box.
I will. And because honestly, what I'm saying is the new Suzy Q's box, I think these chocolate Twinkies are better than what they're putting in labeling new Suzy Q's in the box.
Kadzooks. You know, Suzy Q's are rich. It's often a lot of cake. So I could see, I do like the serving size of the chocolate Twinkie as well. It's just enough. It's just enough.
I was like, I think I even texted you when I was eating it.
I'm just happy that Hostess is on that variety train. They're just going there, and I love it.
Sometimes we that's got, the way.
Cotton candy cream Twinkies as well.
Okay, what is that?
I haven't tried it yet.
What is that? Oh.
I haven't tried it yet, but the cream inside is like pinkish color and it's supposed to taste like cotton candy. But they also have white fudge covered ding dongs.
I'll try that. I like me some white chocolate. Hostess. Yeah.
God, the new Hostess boss, whoever took over with the resurrection, they're all about trying new things.
He's the twin brother of the Oreos boss.
Fuck yeah. They're just like having Starbucks together. And they're like, you know what? Let's just fucking be wild, bro.
Stan and Dan.
He was like, dude, check out these fireworks Oreos. Like, that shit's wild. Check out my cotton candy Twinkie.
You did it.
Yes, we did. And then they just dab each other. Damn.
That should be the we'll know if it's true. If the next Oreo flavor is cotton candy Oreo.
I would be surprised. I mean, they had peep flavored Oreos for Easter.
And Swedish fish.
Fuck it. I mean, they're going there.
If you got a flavor, yo, we'll create it.
For real. I can't rhyme with that. Like,
did they have they come out with the key lime Oreo yet?
No, but they have key lime pie Twizzlers.
Huh.
They have these like flavor states or flavors of the states Twizzlers.
See, everybody's on that now.
But it was all right. I mean, I wanted it to be a little more tart, like the lime. But the flavor was all right.
Think about it, though. The key lime pie perfectly lends itself to the Oreo. You get the white Oreo cookie, and you have the key lime flavored icing.
Yeah. Oh, look, I get it. It'll happen one day. Just you wait. State flavors of the state's Oreo variety.
I'm just shocked it hasn't yet.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
They had orange creamsicle Twizzlers. I tried those too. It's a world out there for snack people.
Whoa, Jason. I'm looking.
Yes.
They have Oreo blueberry pie. They have key lime pie filled. Oh wait, no. The key lime. Oh. I take that back. The key lime. No, they do.
What?
They do.
Oreo goes there.
Wow.
Fucking A, why not?
Wow. It's currently unavailable on Amazon.
Right.
But I knew it. I knew they had to.
Yeah, key lime Oreos, blueberry pie. Yeah. What a world. Key lime pie Oreos. That came out like in 2016, apparently.
I wonder why that didn't do as well.
It said Oreo quietly drops key lime pie Oreos.
Yeah, I wonder.
On the real low, low.
Yeah.
I got a couple of stories before we wrap this turkey up.
All right.
Couple of headlines. Writing about pizza gets you into Yale now. And Chinese factory caught bootlegging Budweiser.
They will bootleg anything.
They will.
Wait. I got a joke. Listeners. But was it discovered that it was just the bootleg of Budweiser was just the water? Because it's a very watery beer.
Let's dig deeper, shall we?
Yes.
I don't know. I feel like a lot of people in China are fucking shameless. My words. I'll stick by it. Knockoff Chinese versions of brand name products is kind of a widespread joke, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got those fake superhero action figure packs at the bodega, knockoff handbags, the fake Chinese versions of famous Hollywood movies like Star Wars. According to Mashable, though, China is breaking into one of the most American products in existence, cheap beer. A small factory in Dongguan, Tao, in the south of China, was raided earlier this month, and what they found might disturb you. The factory was, with very little regard for health codes, mind you, filling Budweiser cans with beer. Obviously, this was not a sanctioned operation, and footage of the factory showed barehanded workers up to their elbows in the stuff. The beer cans were sent down a conveyor belt and packaged like any can of Bud would be. I'm going to paint the picture for you.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you had this big plastic vat, big bucket with like cheap, shitty beer. And you got a bunch of Budweiser cans that are empty. Taking the cans, merging them in the bucket of beer.
Oh.
To fill them up. You're holding the can, your whole arm up to your elbows going into this vat of cheap beer.
Oh.
how vile. Oh, that's what China's up to. Now, the incident of, you know, these people doing this. So, Anheuser-Busch, apparently the factory was producing 600,000 cartons a month.
Damn.
Cartons. The beer was then taken directly to bars and clubs. When Anheuser-Busch InBev, the owner of Budweiser, found out, they contacted the authorities and shut the operation down. Anheuser-Busch InBev has 14 breweries in China, making it the third largest beer manufacturer in the country and one of the biggest in the world. Time bootleg Chinese Budweiser factories have sprung up in China. It's a thriving black market, pumping out hundreds of thousands of cans of fake beer a year. No word on how it tastes, but I can't imagine that it's that much worse than the real deal.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, shit. Taking shots.
You're just drinking carbonated water.
So, this pizza girl, right?
Oh, okay. Yale.
Her name is Williams.
Wait, repeat the name?
Carolina Williams.
Okay.
A normal American teenager, but also kind of a genius. Growing up in Tennessee, she loved that most American of foods, pizza. Instead of writing her college essay about hardship and volunteer work or something, Williams decided to write about Papa John's. You can see that she's a smart cookie from her writing style. Warm cardboard boxes at my front door is second nature to me. Of ordering pizza because of the way 8 slices of something so ordinary are able to evoke feelings of independence, consolation, and joy.
This is a little heavy-handed.
That's some college admission gold right there. Well-structured sentences, a true story, and evocative imagery. A-plus, Carolina. Bull. Was the reaction from the Yale admissions officer. Don't mind the dog barking in the distance. He reportedly responded, quote, "As a fellow lover of pizza, I laughed out loud, then ordered pizza after reading your application," end quote.
That's just loving luck.
Loving Papa John's in a small town in Tennessee is one thing. Choices, and Papa John's has reliable quality, I guess. But Yale is in New Haven, Connecticut, and famous for their pizza. You've got Sally's Pizza, which was favored by Frank Sinatra. There's also the famous Pepe's Pizzeria Napoletana, who makes one of the best white clam pies in town, a New Haven delicacy. Yale employee is not ordering from Papa John's.
If the Yale Williams employee is ordering from Papa John's, we have to reconsider what Yale is.
Williams ultimately decided not to go to Yale. She was offered an enticing scholarship from Auburn University in Alabama. She will be the first in her family to go to college. Power to Williams, who seems like a cool kid, but hopefully she'll visit New Haven sometime and teach this Yale admissions guy a thing or two about eating good pizza.
This is one of those stories where, do we know about it just because news and everything is so like omnipresent?
4 hours.
Yeah, like I find it hard to believe that she's the first person that she wrote a college exam for. To Yale about pizza. Like, they always say, like, write what you know. And, you know, they always say, like, try to capture your unique voice and all of that stuff. So I can't imagine.
Well, Aaron, we're living in a 24-hour news cycle.
You gotta fill it. I mean, I'm not mad at her. It's just one of those things where it's like, you just think about all the stories that we haven't heard of, but yet we hear of this, and it's just oh, okay. They
15 years ago, that wouldn't even have come across the fucking radar.
No, it's not coming on the wire. The AP isn't picking up the story.
Unless you're living in Tennessee and it's in the local paper. But hey.
I just, that's the world like now. Even just though being in the news, I've never been in a news room or office or desk, but I just have a hard time believing that, oh, and all right, Troy, what do you have? This girl, Tennessee, she gets into Yale because, get this, she wrote her essay on pizza. And not just any pizza, Papa John's. And he's like, I love it. Run with it. I don't see that happening.
Well, different reporters, different beats. Different spots to fill.
I'm on the pizza beat.
You know what? I'm on the, no pun intended, slice of life beat.
I'm on I'm the distraction, the good story distraction beat.
Yeah, I think the news has to work harder than ever to find good news nowadays. Or just news like that, that's kind of like just fluff and just something to make you kind of smile a little bit. There's a place for it.
Yeah.
It's all so dark.
I kind of just feel bad though then for her, because now she's somewhat famous for being the girl who wrote the article about pizza, and it's just like, you know, she's going to Auburn, she's going to be a freshman, just let her deal with that. But she's got this internet notoriety.
Well, but you know, that stuff is also very fleeting, so he'll be over it soon enough.
Hopefully.
Can't think of a better way to wrap this episode up.
Nice little bow.
So, you know, some plugs, right? Monsterandwine@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
E.com. You know, Podbean, iTunes. You can find our podcast in these safe havens. These podcast sanctuary cities. That's where you'll find us. And with that, I say, arrivederci! New episode of Andy Magic.